But hey there, this is Danny Sunshine Bauer, host of this podcast. My mission in life is to help school leaders fight isolation and frustration via leadership community in order to gain clarity and find solutions to their greatest challenges. If you get value from today's show, you can show some love back by subscribing to this podcast and leaving a rating and review where you're listening right now. I can serve more school leaders by having a better ranking, which is tied 100% to subscriptions, reviews, and shares on social media. In today's show, I talk with Jennifer Gonzalez, and we explore a number of interesting topics like how Jennifer decides what is a yes and a no, practical tips to improve websites from blah to yeah, and how are you finding your miracle? Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving student soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Students who participate in the Conrad Challenge don't learn to think outside the box. There is no box. Learn how innovation takes off and soars beyond the confines of a box at conradchallenge.org.
Hi, I'm Chris Nessie from the House of EdTech podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. And make sure to check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And now, the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Oh, hey there, better leaders. I am so excited today to have my friend Jennifer Gonzalez on the show. She let me be on her show quite a while ago, and I still get so many connections and people reaching out because we talked about masterminds, and I'm so thankful for that, Jennifer. So I'm glad that I could repay the favor, and I've been meaning to have you on this podcast for quite a while. So if you don't know already, Jennifer is a national board certified teacher with over 10 years of classroom experience. Most of this time was spent teaching middle school language arts, and the rest was at the college level where she trained pre-service teachers for the classroom. In 2013, she created the website Cult of Pedagogy, where she now works full-time to help teachers of all subjects and grade levels practice and perfect the art of teaching. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hey, Danny. I am really, really excited to be on here with you. Thanks.
I am super, super pumped and just can't wait to see where this conversation goes. Let's start. I pretty much ask everybody this, but what's your perfect day at work look like?
Well, my day at work is at home because I do this full time now. So yeah. I guess a perfect day would start with me actually waking up with my alarm at 5:30 instead of waking up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, like I usually do. So getting a good night of sleep and helping my kids get off to school and then just being able to really focus at my desk for a couple of hours. The thing that I love the most about my job now is that I get to do a variety of things. So some days I'm doing what we're doing right now. I'm podcasting with somebody. Other days I'm doing some research on a topic in education, or I'm reading a book, or I'm writing. So I get to do a lot of different things. And then I clock out at 11:30 and I go to CrossFit. And that is the highlight of my day. And then come home, eat, get a little bit more work done. And then my kids come home from school. And from there, it's just being a parent. So I'd say it's about 5 to 6 like really concentrated hours of work. And then the rest of the time, it's little bits and pieces here and there.
Gotcha. And tell me a bit about the highlight of your day. So that's at 11:30. You run over to work out. And why is that the highlight? I see the big smile and I hear the laugh. So tell me more.
Because you're like one of my CrossFit people. Like you understand a little bit. So this is something we have in common. I've been doing CrossFit for 3.5 years now. And I will talk about it for the rest of this podcast if you want to, because I can never stop talking about it. It's just amazing. I am almost 50 years old and I feel like an athlete for the first time in my life. You and I, just before we started recording, we're talking about getting handstands, and my friends and I at the gym talk about monkey bars, and we're sprinting down the street, and just like, it's just a ton of physical challenges. I just feel myself getting stronger and more coordinated. And I don't know, it's just, it's nice to be humbled every day by what you can't do and by be challenged by the things that you want to do. And just keep setting goals and I don't know. People should try CrossFit.
Definitely. Well, there's so much there, right? And we could do a whole episode about it. I don't know how people would respond, but the fact that it is humbling, you know, every single time. Mm-hmm. So it keeps your ego in check, which I think leaders need, you know, in terms of the listeners of this show.
Yeah.
Just a good, healthy slap in the face that you're not as special as you think. But, you know, building your confidence, you know, the fact that you feel like an athlete for the first time. And for me, I really appreciate the variety. It's always a challenge, which you also mentioned, and it's different every single time, although it builds on the fundamentals. So I think there's a lot of leadership, you know, principles there.
Definitely, definitely. And it's differentiation too. Like every day we see differentiation because they'll set up the workout and then everybody in the room basically has to decide what can you do within this framework? And so we adjust our own weights, we adjust our own movements to where we're all getting the same workout at our own level. And it's a beautiful model that schools really could follow, I think, if they were exposed to it a little bit more. It's that sort of self-differentiation.
Yeah, we need to see that so much more. Wild. Yeah. CrossFit. Who knew we'd be talking about that? Hey, maybe we could talk a bit about you doing what you do now full time. And I'm curious, when did that transition happen for you?
So when I started having kids, I've got three kids and they're 11, 12, and 13, 14 right now. When I had them, I left the classroom and it was supposed to just be for a couple of years. And during that time off when I was at home, I got work at a local college here working with pre-service teachers. And I really loved it. And I did that for 4 years. And I thought, well, I want to keep doing this. So I sort of had a decision to make. Am I going to go get a PhD and do this for real and be really serious about it? Or not? Am I going to just go back to the classroom and continue teaching K-12? And so right around that time, I had to get some extra credits just to keep my teaching certification. And I took some ed tech courses. So I learned how to blog at that time. And I was the student in our class who went well above and beyond what I was supposed to be doing. Like I added artwork every time and I just really, and everybody else was just kind of phoning it in. And I realized like, I really love doing this. And then what happened was our student teachers that we were working with one semester, they drastically cut the amount of hours we could meet with them. They wanted them to have more hours in their classrooms. And so all of the stuff that I had taught them during our classes, I couldn't figure out how I was going to do that. And without knowing what a flipped lesson was, I flipped the lessons. I recorded some of my lectures and put them online for them. And then we would meet in a shorter span of time. And I also really found an affinity for that, for the video editing. And I thought, I think I want to keep doing this on my own. I want to just have a blog. So I just started to do that. And then I learned how to basically generate enough of an income from it that it could become a job and I could actually support myself full time on that. Because if I were to stop doing it, or if I were to go back to teaching, I wouldn't be able to do what I do because it takes so much time. And I was an English teacher and that took a crap ton of time. So there's no way I could do both of those things. So it just kind of evolved. I learned how to create online courses. I learned how to create digital classroom materials and it's great. Now, a lot of times now the work comes to me and I have to sort of pick what I do because there's so many opportunities.
Mm-hmm. So how do you decide what's a yes, what's a no?
I just basically think about it's two things. Is it something I'm enthusiastic about? And is it something that my audience would care about? And, you know, my audience is very, very broad. I've got people who teach preschool in my audience. I've got people who teach college. I've got medical people who teach in medical schools who listen to my podcast and read my blog. So it's such a wide range that I really do have to focus on teaching in general. I can narrow down the focus every now and then, but if I go too narrow for too long, I know I'm going to start losing people. So it's got to be a nice buffet all the time of stuff that, and a lot of times I get my ideas from stuff my kids bring home. You know, they'll bring home stories or assignments and tell me things that are going on in their classrooms. And I'm thinking, I think I need to write a blog post about this or go interview somebody about this problem or whatever. So yeah, it's basically that combination.
Yeah. You know, I asked because as a leader of a local school, I want the listener to consider, you know, what is it that your school needs? Because a lot of times we try to pick that perfect program or set the vision for the school. And you need to do that as a leader, but you need to do it in conjunction with understanding who you serve, you know?
Yes.
So I had a sense that you would say that, but I wanted to hear it, you know, from you. And so like, what am I going to enjoy working on? What projects are going to give me life, give me energy? And then what mm-hmm. does my audience need? And that's a perfect question to ask as a school leader. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and you have to ask them, because I thought, especially early on, I would be working on a project thinking, man, this is going to kill. Like, this is going to crush it, you know? And I'd put it out there and it was like, wah, wah. And then other times I would put something else out there that I thought was just okay. And it would just be like gangbusters. And I would think, oh, this is what they want. And, you know, what I've realized, my audience really wants practical stuff that they can apply right away.
Right.
And a lot of times too, I would just survey them. I would send out surveys and realize, like, one thing that surprised me is my audience is older than I thought they were. I thought I was attracting younger teachers. Most people who follow my stuff are 10 years plus in the classroom.
Wow.
And so it helps to survey your people and find out, like, who are you? What are you interested in? What do you care about? That's how I ended up writing a tech guide. Because one of the earliest surveys I did, I asked them sort of, what problems are you dealing with? You know, what are your needs right now? And a lot of people said, I want to get better at technology, but it's overwhelming. There's so much out there. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I can help them with that. I can help sort things out and give them a straighter line to figuring out what tools to use. And now that's one of my biggest offerings, basically, is, and that came from a survey.
Gotcha. So yeah, surveying, asking, and understanding the challenges, the problems, the demographics, all that's so important. Mm-hmm. And speaking of want-wants and practicality, when I visit a number of people's blogs, they're not so great, right?
Yeah.
And that can be a stumbling block, because school leaders that listen to this show, they have an important message, but it might get lost because of how, you know, it's packaged. So I'm wondering if you have some practical tips that you could offer listeners, just in terms of like a faceless lift almost for their website, that's not, you know, not so wah-wah and making it, yeah, like, this is fun.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, the first thing that comes to mind, really, I think design is super important. And so many school websites just have that same template that came out, I guess, in the mid 90s, where the font is super tiny and everything's all squished together. And I go to a lot of school websites for various reasons, and it's always such a breath of fresh air when I go to one that has a fresh, updated, modern, responsive design that just, it looks like a lot of other current websites now. And those are not that hard to find. And I think if schools probably, I would guess, a lot of leaders get flyers, you know, in the mail or stuff that says, you know, hey, we can design a new way. I think it's a worthy investment. It just, So design for one thing, but also just, there is a lot of stuff that comes out of schools that I just never get around to reading. And I think it's, I don't know, there's something very sort of generic and corporate sometimes that comes out of schools that mm-hmm. feels like it was written by a faceless, mm-hmm. you know? And it's funny, because when I first started my website, I actually tried to do that. I tried to make it Cult of Pedagogy, more of like an organization. And I used the Royal We when I talked about things that we did. And it was just me. And after listening to some other people in this field who do blogging and stuff, they talked about how your audience wants to connect with a person. They don't want to connect with a corporation. And so I started bringing myself out from behind the curtain a lot more. And that was good. And so I guess, I think with leaders, it helps too, that they know a person mm-hmm. and not just, because it's weird. Any website, like, it looks like it was put out by a machine, but there are people behind there, like, typing stuff. So, like, Let us see who these people are and make people's pictures bigger. Every school website I go to, there's the teacher webpage. The teacher's picture is like 7 pixels wide and you can't see them. And we're so, like, blocked off from each other now by all of our devices, but we're trying desperately through these devices to connect to each other. So something as simple as enlarging the photos of people and getting good quality photos of them, which can be done with an iPhone, mm-hmm. makes a huge difference, I think. So this is also a topic I could talk about for a long time, because I've been doing this for 5 years now.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Well, I want to dig in a little more about being a person instead of the mm-hmm. the corporation. And mm-hmm. you know, I'm connected to some people that I highly recommend listeners check out. Jesse Cole was on this podcast. He's the president of the Savannah Bananas, the best college summer league baseball team you've never heard of. but they've sold out, Jennifer, they've sold out for like 3-4 years in a row, this 4,000 person stadium in Savannah because they're so crazy. And what he understands, he's not about baseball, he's about entertainment. And so he has the grandma nanas, and these grandmas come in and they dance, right? Or they'll do a baseball game from the ninth inning to the first, and they do everything backwards. It's all this like strange, fun stuff. Or Christopher Lockhead, and he's the author of Niche Down. And so all of these things, like I think there's power, there's awesomeness when you go deep into like almost what makes you different, and you let your personality shine through. Because that's what people connect with. You know, I'm so surprised at like how many folks will quote things that I've said, and it's just so weird, but it's because I'm being real, and I guess the message is hidden home, you know? So that's cool. But you know, how did you make that subtle shift? Because it's kind of scary to say, all right, I'm gonna put myself out there.
Well, I mean, one of the very first posts I wrote was Find Your Marigold, which I still see shared every single day on Twitter. It's just about surrounding yourself with good people, which is the advice I used to give to my student teachers. And that was one where, you know, I could talk a little bit more about sort of my personal experiences. And I just noticed that every time I did that type of thing, they resonated really with my audience. And so one thing that I did figure out, and this is also for me as a listener of other people's podcasts and a reader of other people's websites, is that I do think there's a fine line there between sharing yourself and being yourself and being really self-indulgent, to where it's just like whatever your audience is or whatever the group is that you're serving, they're coming to you for a thing, for some sort of a deliverable, whether it's an education or like even like with your students in the class, like they're there to learn this thing and they do want to get to know you. But if you push the needle too far to where you're just, and we've all had these teachers who spend all this time talking about like, oh, my son Daniel is doing this week. And after a while, the kids are just like, shut up about your son. After like, we don't care that much. There's a balance there because they still want to have that product that you're supposed to be delivering to them. Mm-hmm. And if you don't ever get to that, if that baseball team only did the hijinks the whole time and there was never actually any kind of a baseball game, after a while, some people would go away because it would be like, well, it's just the silly stuff. Mm. There's a website called Schmoop that does a lot of like, it's almost like Cliff's Notes. They do a lot of like study guides for kids and they're very funny and sarcastic and they use a lot of pop culture references. And I feel like with them, it's like, it's funny, but every once in a while, I'm like, okay, enough of that. Like get to what I came here for, which is a summary of mm-hmm. Othello. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it's, you know, I mean, you can get to play with it. I guess it's a balancing act. But anyway, I think it's just experimentation and watching for people's reactions to things.
Yeah. Any advice for school leaders that are really buttoned up in one way or two that they can loosen the tie or at least undo one of their buttons?
Gosh, that's a great question. Man, that's just a personality type, you know? I think it's just believing that is what people want from you. And I think a lot of times leaders tell themselves, I have to be the serious one. I can remember having a boss who we were doing a project and she said literally, I can't laugh, but that was funny. I thought that was stupid. Like, you can laugh. It's okay. Right, right. Like, you know, it... I feel like the same thing, like I just said about being connected with devices, like I feel like people want to work with people and they want to connect with people. And, you know, I wrote a post called When a Principal Whips and Nay-Nays that maybe I'll send you a link to, because it's sort of about that. It's about the value of goofing off a little bit and letting people see other sides to you apart from sort of the corporate face and how it makes people feel like they're part of a family and that they're more at home. And it frees them up to also be themselves a little. And it just, man, when I've worked for people who can do that, it makes such a difference. Because when we are all just human, we want to be understood. And when somebody shows some of their own weaknesses, you feel like they're going to be a little bit more forgiving of yours. So it puts less pressure on everybody.
I love that last line there. When somebody shows their weaknesses, you think that they're going to be a little more forgiving of yours, right? And they're going to understand you a bit better. And that's the power, I think, of vulnerability, of authenticity, of transparency. Because when you say, you know, I don't got all my stuff together, there are blemishes and that kind of, you know, I'm real just like you, gives permission to not, yeah, try to fake it as well within your staff. Yeah. That was beautiful. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So, hey, in the mastermind, we're reading Great at Work, and I'm not going to quiz you on it. I don't know if you've read it. So, but one of the characteristics to being an awesome contributor to your community has to do with passion and purpose, right? And so obviously, mm-hmm. if you have more passion, more purpose, you're going to contribute a lot more to your organization. But it's actually a weakness too, because when you are so passionate, like you are about what you do, like, and I'm asking this question for me, by the way. So when you're so passionate, it could be hard to turn things off and to wind things down. So I'm just wondering how you deal with that. And I don't have a family. You have some amazing kids as well. So what do you do to wind down and unplug?
I don't know if I always do, but sometimes it's just sheer force. You know, it helps that I don't work face to face very much with people. I don't have, like when I was a teacher, you had the kids right there. You had to deal with them. I can just stand up and walk away from my computer and it's like, it doesn't even exist. So sometimes it is just walking away, changing location helps a lot in terms of like actually going someplace, going for a walk, starting some activity that will occupy my mind and distract me from that thing that I was, you know, focusing on. I don't have a long attention span personally anyway, so I generally need some variety in my day no matter what's going on. But I don't know. That's actually something that I'm wrestling with myself too, in terms of just, I'm very good at working and I'm not as good at socializing. So I have to force myself to do that. And usually when I do, it goes great, but it's the transition time that's hard. But doing it over and over again, you kind of believe that it's going to be a good thing for you. So you just put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah. And those reps, I think, start making it a reality for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, Jennifer, you know, Tony Robbins is famous for saying that quality questions create a quality life, and successful people ask better questions. As a result, they get better answers. What do you think is one question that novice school leaders should ask themselves more?
Novice school leaders should ask themselves. I think really, if someone is new to leadership, maybe even more than a question would just be that they should be observing other people, observing other leaders, especially in leadership. It's an isolating practice. You know, there's a lot of stuff that sort of goes on behind closed doors. And so, you know, watching other people do their work while they're doing it can be really, really eye-opening. I was really big into modeling as a teacher in terms of if I wanted my kids to write something, they didn't get what I meant. And then I would actually write an example and then they would get it. And so I feel like the more time leaders can spend shadowing each other, and then I think all the questions would come then, because, you know, you're just sort of seeing how things work. I guess it is another level of vulnerability, really, of being able to see other people right in the middle of doing those hard things. And I think people learn when they actually see stuff in action. You know, when they see someone else doing it, then it's like, oh, that's what that looks like. I never understood what that meant. But, you know, like with teachers even, you know, a lot of times for us, the first time we make a parent phone call is the first time we've ever experienced a parent phone call. Whereas if we could sit in on some of our colleagues doing it, then we would have some examples to follow. And multiple observations, I think, are the best, because then you can see what you do want to do and what you don't want to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Those non-examples, that was a great way to teach vocabulary as a former English teacher. You probably did that as well. But I'm coaching folks one-on-one all the time, they have aspirations. The AP that wants to be the principal that wants to be a superintendent. And I ask, you know, are you journaling and reflecting on not just like who you want to be, but if you see examples of what you don't want to be, are you capturing those and then talking about how you do it different? I think that's a very powerful practice to go through.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Well, hey, let's pause here for just a sec for a message from our sponsors. Organized Binder is a proven education success platform. Case studies show it develops the skills and habits students need for success. Organized Binder provides teacher a common structure and language for daily and unit planning without interfering with the teacher's individual style. With Organized Binder, parents gain a clear picture of what their student is learning and how to best support them. Organized Binder equips school leaders with a universal solution to unify and build positive school culture. Visit organizedbinder.com to learn how this education success platform supports students, teachers, and parents. And we're back with Jennifer Gonzalez, the mastermind, no pun intended. I don't know if that's a pun, but I do mastermind, so I wanted to use the word there too. And she is the mastermind behind The Cult of Pedagogy, which is just a rocking blog and podcast. So if you haven't checked that out, it'll definitely be linked up in the show notes here for you. And that Nene, do the Nene and the Whip blog post. Can't wait to check that one out and send it out to folks too. You know, I learned that. I saw it on YouTube and I tried to do the Nene and tried to do, and I wasn't so good with YouTube, but when Nintendo had I don't remember what dance game and you could use, that's how I learned, you know? So I learned so many cool dances. Thank you, Nintendo. I love you so much. So, okay, that's enough about me and dancing, but Jennifer, let's talk about tools. I'm talking about Nintendo. That's a great way to learn to dance, but in terms of tools for you, is there a book, a video, or tool that's really impacted your leadership, productivity, or quality of life in maybe the last 3 months?
I'm going to have to go back sooner than 3 months because this book continues to impact me all the time, and it's Presentation Zen. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
No, tell us more.
Oh, see, I need to get the, this is why I picked this book, because I need, my sister and I were just talking about this the other night. Gar Reynolds is the author. It's been around. The book is probably 15 years old. Essentially, it is about PowerPoints, which many, many of us use, or keynotes or whatever, but it is about presentation and how horrible most of the world is at it in terms of what we say and do in them, but also in terms of the design of our slides. And he really, really gets into how, and again, it's considering your audience. It's taking your audience on a journey. It's not overloading your slides with a lot of junk. It's, I think, such an important book in terms of how we communicate with each other in that presentation mode. And yet every day I see so many examples of so much proof that that book has not gotten out into the world yet.
Exactly.
So it was one of my very first book reviews that I did. That's how important it was. I did that on Cult of Pedagogy because I just really wanted teachers to see it. So if somebody has been doing a lot of reading on like motivation or like leadership or, you know, project management, this would be a complete break from that because this is about presentation, which a lot of people have to do.
Oh, definitely.
And I can tell immediately when I go into a room and sit down, I can tell immediately when somebody is familiar with that book by what they have up on the slides and how they speak. So it's revolutionary. Presentation Zen.
Presentations, and we'll have that linked up for folks. And I think that's a great tip. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, you've been a great guest. This is the final question that everybody gets asked. So I'm very excited to see how you're going to answer it. You're building a school from the ground up. No pressure. You get an A too, by the way. If you haven't read The Art of Possibility, that has like so many practices about leadership too, but everybody gets an A. So you can't fail, Jennifer. You already passed.
Awesome.
But you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school and what would be your top three priorities?
Okay. One would be that the whole building is designed for flexibility. And so not just within the classroom, but within the whole school. So things would be on wheels. Tables would be on wheels. Things could be moved together, pulled apart. There would be movable walls. There would be movable sort of whiteboard type structures that you could create and compartmentalize within the building. So just in terms of furniture and flexibility, that would be really key. And with that flexibility, to make sure that gathering spaces are a big priority, that there are going to be lots and lots of ways for people to gather formally and informally, to collaborate, to talk, to have just one-on-one types of things with some privacy, like all different types of ways to gather and collaborate with each other. The second thing is that nature be brought into the building and that the building be designed so that nature is actually something we can access in some way. From natural light being able to come into the room to the types of plantings that we put inside the building. I just think that that really changes the way people feel about their spaces. And we just see very little of that in schools. I just don't think that that's a part of budgeting generally for schools. So I would love to see that. And I guess the third thing, which is kind of boring, but I would just want to make sure that the building is really well wired for technology so that there's just ease of, you know, wireless stuff and that we don't have unstable internet or anything. I would just make sure that that is state of the art and that it's even put together with growth in mind for future stuff.
Well, I knew you'd sneak in some design elements into that answer. So kudos to you again. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any parting words of advice and the best way to get a hold of you?
Best way to get a hold of me is just to go to cultofpedagogy.com and I've got all of my stuff there and links to everything there. Parting words of advice. This actually brings us back to CrossFit. This is something that's on our CrossFit wall. They say, and I guess there's a way of translating this to leadership, but they say, you know, our movements are not dangerous. The weights are not dangerous. Ego is dangerous. Mm. And that is what gets you into trouble all the time. And I think that's true in the gym. And I think it's true in the classroom. Almost every mistake I've ever made as a teacher has been driven by ego. And I think it's definitely true in leaders from everywhere between schools to our government. ego gets us into trouble in all kinds of ways. So that's something that's just a word of warning.
Yeah. Maybe another podcast episode.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for being on the show. You're wonderful.
Thanks so much, Daniel.
All right, Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. I created a new resource for you called The 3 Leadership Questions I Ask Every Day. You can download the resource by visiting betterleadersbetterschools.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. This helps me in a few ways. It gives the show some social proof, it encourages new people to listen to the show, and it improves the ranking of the show and therefore helps me serve more school leaders. If you want extra credit and some good vibes, share your biggest takeaway from the show and tag me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer, and make sure to use the hashtag BLBS. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Join over 3,000 school leaders that get this resource delivered every week. In the weekend resource, I share content curated specifically for school leaders. You'll get articles, videos, templates and exercises, coaching tips, inspirational quotes, invitations to free Friday group coaching, which is an exclusive offer made available only to newsletter subscribers in the Better Leaders, Better Schools tribe, and links to all the content I created for you this past week. You can subscribe at betterleadersbetterschools.com/weekend-resource. And remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader.